This is the Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. I am Grace Cavalieri, and Taylor Johnson is a name that everyone's talking about in the poetry world, and we're so happy that we got him today. Here he is with the poem.
Since I've quit that internet service, I'm thinking more about the transitive properties in books, the words, the palimpsest of images accruing in my brain, but more immediately the book in my hand, the cover worn at one end from sweat and gripping it when it comes close, close as in when I stood up, let one deep exhale, when I came to the lines of all fearless happiness from which reaches my life I sing and find it underlined by a beloved stranger. It's like turning the record over, knowing you're hearing what I'm hearing. Easing up on the edge of the chair, it's like we're holding hands now at the edge of a white silence from which we are to make a music of our being here, of being moved, wherein our music complements and holds close each other's sound. Sound in the wet room of the tree I met you in. Nothing is said about the water or the fearless trees angled toward and against the light. Light that did fall on me, made much of me, light that sings through me. So I'm singing.
Made much of you, made much of you. Taylor Johnson, how do you describe this book and what is the name of the book?
This book is called Inheritance. I would describe it as kind of like a sensorial experience through language. Most of it was written while I was in DC, some of it in Paris, and a lot of it written while walking. So what I'm trying to do is to speak through my influences and to add my voice to the great chorus that is the chorus of poets, which you know so much about, Grace. So,
oh, Taylor, yeah. Your voice is going to be heard so often. You're mm-hmm. just going to have paparazzi. You know, the book is so powerful. It is so intense. I got tears in my eyes when I read it, but I'm up for it. You want to know something? I understand every word in it. And so it spoke to me. I call it language from your soul planet because it couldn't come from any other planet. I mean, this is language that I have never seen words arranged the way you arrange words. And I'll tell you, I said, thank you, God, because I'm so tired of reading ordinary poetry. let us give another poem and then we'll talk about exactly what I mean. Taylor Johnson is from D.C., now living in Maryland, and we'll hear more poetry.
Here's Kuro. Whereas I come into the into to talk with my shadow, from you I've not hid my face. For in the morning I make and am made by you, beautiful projection, boy in the mirror, boy in my mind. I separate my flesh from my flesh to become more like you, to drown in your holdings. Oh, young lord of my desire, you are the light I ride toward, I run from. I eat less and avoid being hailed, anonymous interstitial prince of my undoing, redeemer of my yes. I want to grow into you and then abandon your imprecise naming. I am bequeathed violence, your inheritance, and your rough glamour. I am made to tarry here with you, thus illumined by your tenuous light.
What is the title of that one?
Chiaroscuro.
You did that one for me because you knew I loved it. I told you that. You know, that's your autobiography, that poem, by the mm-hmm. way. Mm-hmm. And here it is. Here's what you do that's so different. Okay, it's lyrical. Now, why is it lyrical? Most people are doing vowels, and that is how they get lyricism. What you do is take the most unusual connection of words that one can imagine. Their abstractions, your diction will then add on like a social political term, and you put together these so unusual words that it makes a song, and it's like jazz. It's very unexpected, and it becomes lyrical the way jazz is lyrical in a very strange way. It's not because it has a melody, And this is not because you work on your vowels, but because you are so spontaneous with language. I told you I wanted an MRI of your brain, I swear it. But do you agree that this is what you're doing? Do you know what you're doing?
I think sometimes I know what I'm doing. I think that there's a lot. I mean, I really appreciate what you just said. What it reminds me of is how I felt when I first began to be interested in poetry. And my entrance into that world was through someone who has rather ecstatic lyrics, was the poet John Donne.
Metaphysical poet.
Yeah, the metaphysical poets. Oh. So there's a lot that's from that angle as well, and that I kind of have taken in as my own language.
You have said everything. You're our modern metaphysical poet.
Wow,
because
Grace.
These are poems of ecstasy.
Mm-hmm.
They are poems of ecstasy, like William Blake's visionary mm-hmm. poems. However, the language is very 21st century. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you what I feel about it, except I just say thank you. Let's hear another poem. This
thank
is Taylor
so much,
Johnson.
Grace.
You will never forget him. Once you meet him.
My idea of abstraction is white lightning, Jack Whitten. Halfway between Gunyan and Ophelia, eminent splendor. It doesn't matter what I don't know. Clouds creating a blue fissure in the sky. Whose grammar, whose sadness hurries forth. I want to speak to order, soybeans, corn, wheat rose browned to torpor, mercy, protozoan, water shorn. Hotly I listen in the pines for my green name. Whoever can stop reasoning, stop. Is it too much to ask to be remade? I who've just begun. Adagio of light, copper-hued diadem hanging on twilight's hem, Virginia's sun. I'm yet released from the sharp language of being. Make me another by morning, lest I stay in this vestibule wholly unmade.
I like the way you end with your voice. It's as if nothing has really stopped, that the energy is going to go on, that something happened before the poem and something's going to happen after the poem. But you're also very much part of our society, and you talk and you actually have a poem about go-go. What is go-go, the Washington, D.C. scene of go-go?
Yeah, I mean, it's D.C.'s Black Indigenous sound. It's the sound of percussive movement. It's also the sound of people coming together and being one and nothing together, becoming one and nothing at the same time. And so a lot of my lyric, what I like to think of my lyric and also the hopeful lyric potential of my line is to mimic that kind of entropy. Sounds that fold back on themselves is what I'm going for. And that's what go-go gave me growing up, listening to this music and being a part of the sound as somebody who just goes to go-go's. That is what the sound gave to me. And I know, you know, it's used, it's a form of entertainment, of course, and people go to enjoy themselves, but I felt privileged to grow up in this area, to become a student of that sound, to not just enjoy it for its purpose as a party, but also as a way to think about the movement of language and the movement of bodies.
It is about motion.
Yeah.
And I listened, and I'm old enough to know when it began in Washington. And I listened to it, and I couldn't describe the sound. Can you describe the sound? I mean, it's like, it's not rock, it's not punk, it's not jazz. Mm-hmm. What is the sound? I mean, to describe it.
There are a few different rhythms. I mean, I think the thing that stays consistent is that there is a pocket that you can fall into, or a certain kind of groove that the back line keeps, you know what I mean? And some of it kind of sounds like being underwater, you know what I mean? And then some of it is almost like creating its own time, you know what I mean?
Ooh, like you are.
I remember the last time I went to go-go, I went with my wife, and it was her first time. She's not from here. And we were there from maybe midnight till 4:30 a.m. It felt like we were there for just an hour. But the music and the intention of the people, we kind of created our own zone. in time, which is a beautiful thing.
You said the word. It's intention. It's a movement. It's a religion in a way.
Yeah.
And it's about the people.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that is, it's good. I haven't heard the term in quite a long time. Thomas Sayers Ellis quite a bit of it in his book. You know, let's hear another poem and take us somewhere we've never been. Before you do that, let me just tell them who you are, because I know who you are and nobody else does. Well, the book is Inheritance, Alice James Books, and it won the 2021 Norma Farber First Book Award from the Poetry Society of America. That's the big time. And his work has been in all the best magazines. The Paris Review, that is like the thing to get in. Poetry Magazine, The Baffler, Scalawag, and a lot of other places. He's the inaugural 2022 Poet in Residence at the Guggenheim Museum. So he's going to be traveling to New York. And after this poem, we'll find out why. Give it to us, Taylor.
Go-go ode. Oh, capacious room, give me your tongues. I'm done with being self-possessed. Take hold, turn the river in me. I'm freed up to be anybody else. My molecules twinned with the sound. Oh, erotic hours, pass me not. Keep me in the pocket. Oh, percussive descent, devotion is anything you say go awry. In this early hour, keep me recursive. The impulse is to lose my feet. I'm yet overcome, you seismic drop, you sovereign fade. Oh, black chaos, I'm in study at your center. Turn me out.
Oh, Taylor, I love you. You know, you've broken new ground in poetry, and are you going to teach?
Yeah, I've been lucky enough to teach for, you know, since the book came out, just one-off positions at different colleges and also with different high schools across the country. I'm lucky this fall to be able to teach with some students at the Cooper Union Saturday program, high school students in New York, and then also various other online creative writing workshops for high school students.
Are you? I know everyone wants you, but you've decided to concentrate on high school kids?
That's just where I'm at right now. Yeah, that's just where I'm at right now.
How are you going to teach people to be original?
Oh, man. I mean, I think the most important thing about being in a poetry workshop or classroom that's devoted to thinking about poetry is really just finding ways to communicate about what you like and don't like and trying to become a community with the people who are around you so you can get different people's opinions in your mind, but also hear yourself very clearly. I think that was one thing that really helped me out is the ability to hear myself clearly. And a lot of that took just a lot of reading to find resonance and dissonance. So that's hopefully what we'll do with some of the students.
Resonance and dissonance. That's the title of your book of essays.
I love that. Oh, man.
Yeah, because I hear them coming. I think you have things to say. Mm. You know, I still think genius helps. Mm. Don't you think genius helps?
I don't know, Grace. You might be better sayer of that than me, but yeah.
What will you do at the Guggenheim?
So at the Guggenheim, I've programmed a year of interdisciplinary studies in poetry. So I'm working with some artists who are visual artists, people who are dancers, who also incorporate poetry into their practice or are poets and have, you know, published books. So there are some panels about movement, structure, and sound. There will be readings, I think it's every other month, with three or four poets, just pop-up readings in the galleries, as well as working with the teen program there, and also putting poems on the walls of the museum. There's, I think, three or four poems up right now in the museum. And just trying to immerse myself in the ekphrastic mode.
Wow, so there's a little Frank O'Hara going on, too.
Maybe, yeah.
Do you paint?
No, you know, I just took a class at the Washington Studio School, drawing in the collage where we had to paint a little bit. But no, I'm not. I don't do it.
I think you will.
You will. Cool. Yeah.
It sounds like you're going to be living in New York.
Well, I commute. Oh. I go from D.C. to New York. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Have you actually been at the Guggenheim yet?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So we started about in January. So it'll be, you know, a full year.
So you're not only a teacher, you're a curator.
For right now, yes, I am. Yeah, I dig it.
Oh, Taylor, what will you be when you grow up? I can't wait. Let's hear another poem. Right this on. Is Taylor Johnson, who has stolen my heart.
West 177th and Broadway. All night you eyed the man I wanted to be. My jaw flexed tight. Anger slipped into desire. Easily he would rise. Easily you would disperse. Pleasure made into light. What you want under him, I put on to amuse. I, your worked supplicant. Yes, love is looking away. My desire greened in your dismissal was technicolor and twilight made and never turning off. The city air hung humid above our charade. What need I could feel to transubstantiate, to unravel.
To unravel. And then you let that just linger in the air there. Well, you've had formal training. So where did you study John Donne?
That was actually just in high school. I'm not sure how I found him, but I remember reading some of his holy sonnets when I was 15. That was when I kind of got hooked to the language and to the potential of language to take you out of the moment that you're in.
Mm. Yeah. So you know that you were a poet. You knew it.
No, I didn't. I don't think I really knew that. I wanted to study it, and I still have a tenuous relationship with the word because I think that it is something that people will call you, and I want to show up every day working to become that term. I think when I was 15, I knew I loved reading and I loved language, so I went with that. And then I started studying poetry seriously when I was in college.
Where was that?
It was at Oberlin College.
Oh, yes, you mentioned Oberlin. You know, it's interesting the way you say that you got into a place beyond time, and that's where your poetry comes out of. Then you were at Cave Canem for 3 years, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And tell everyone what that is.
Cave Canem is a fellowship for Black poets, rather, in Greensburg, Pennsylvania, started in 1996 by Tor Derricotte and Cornelius Eady. And you workshop with, I think must be five or six other poets, and you're in a group of fellow poets, and you're there for about a week. And you are in deep community around poetry with some pretty awesome folks.
Deep community. I guess that says it all. Have another poem. Another poem from Taylor Johnson, please.
A kind of wildness descends, and across the expanse, the attendant wind drones its one feckin' song. When I'm so tender in the thick of rot, I let all the morning wet spread a plague across this threadbare vessel that holds in what hums, what rushes beneath. Give as the ground gives. Make of me your groveling tongue, your dust, your possessed. Possessing, never let up.
And they are prayer-like, and they are song-like, and they are interior monologues, and they are never boring. Mm. Never boring. That's the one thing that is, sometimes we see poems that are pretty, and they observe things, but the ones that win the Nobel Prize are the ones that are really tell what it is from the soul. And this is what you're doing. And I think I like that you don't call yourself a poet, because a poet is something other people call you. And you never do say that about yourself. You say you're a writer, you say you write poetry, and now you're going to be a teacher. And how are they deciding who will get you? What high schoolers will get you online?
Oh, yeah, I think it's just by application. Yeah, I'm not sure, but I think it's just by application.
But what's the overall umbrella for it? Is it Cooper Union?
Yeah. So it's Cooper Union, but it's students who are in their Saturday program for visual arts. So it's people who have done sculpture or painting or, you know, like media design, just students who work with more visual media, who I'll be, you know, talking to them about poetry and hopefully, you know, trying to link up their work to poetry.
Another poem, we cannot get enough of it. This is from the book Inheritance, and it's available, Alice James Books. And they write, they only publish things that are provocative and, as they say, contribute to the world, dynamically push against silence.
Pennsylvania Avenue Southeast. Bless the boys riding their bikes straight up at midnight, touching, if only briefly, holding hands as they cross the light to Independence. Bless them, for from the side, the one on the red bike looks like me. His red-brown hair loose against the late summer static heat. The boy, who is not me, see how I did that, fixes his mouth to say something I'll never hear. I love you, or I'm so sad, though, more than likely, catch up. Bless the boy who is me on his bike because he was a witness to my witnessing and did not turn away, did not make of me a disappeared, burned thing, instead nodded, as boys do. Bless the distance and the knowing there. What my mind makes of these boys. Bless that long hallway I'm always going through. Bless what could be mine or me. Bless the boys I wanted to be or wanted.
I wanted or wanted. That there is a spiritual chant going on. And do you think you brush up against Buddhism a little bit?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's an interesting question. I've never really thought about that. I was fortunate enough to grow up going to some Buddhist temples with the school that I went to. So I think I kind of took in some of that. A lot of people who I went to school with were Buddhists. I think I respect Buddhism and tend to listen to some of the some of the teachings from that world.
It comes, it emanates, and I can't really put a label on what you're doing, but it's like it's very Zen in a way, and yet it's very much of this world. So it's a very, that is, I think, where we get that tension, that it is very spiritual, but it's very immediate and political. So that is what gives you the chills. I mean, it's not one or the other. But I do think you don't need to practice Zen, or you already are practicing Buddhism. And it is just the enlightened, Buddha was just an enlightened master, just like Mohammed and Jesus, right? Mm-hmm. And the essence is, you deal in essence. You are a poet of essence. And so I do want to hear more.
Semiotics. In the dream, I am my father riding through the tide countryside with a banjo playing itself in the passenger seat, strapped in like a baby. The light fallen so thick it makes a brass bowl of the valley, the light articulating green to the day. I want to sing it real, what I saw with his eyes, like a river sings to an ocean until the river is a cloud. Sing the song a cloud sings to a mountain. Sing it true in liquid delight. The light fallen. I resonate. I green. I steam ring and undo my face. I let the new light undo my face. I become my father's distance in the temple. The glinting Buddha head casting gold between the floor and his frayed shadow. His fallow voice repeats the mantra leave. Leave, leave as he passes, glass beads between his fingers. Oh. My father rocks side to side in prayer. I become that groove. I weep as my father in devotion and anger. We write the same letter to my mother. You are, you did, you. I become my father as speed on a highway. The tape deck playing associations. Father is to fathomed as phantom is to what? The answers draw a sentence across the windshield as crude lines. I'm a banjo driving, trying to read the blueprint my father left. I think it was his voice.
The words, the words, the words. Please leave some for us. Leave a few of them. I mean, this is too much.
Oh, you, man.
Your grandfather and grandmother featured largely in mm-hmm. your work. The emphasis is on them, really. You mentioned your mother once and your father. What were they to you?
They were everything. I mean, I think that they were the source of a lot of my original language. Just their method of communication with each other and their silences is something that I deeply internalized as a child and was a witness to, and a lucky witness to their language and the way that they were. I think it's something just about the difference in age that I was able to see as like this beautiful gap that I wanted to traverse with them. So I love them very much.
Your grandmother died.
Both of them have passed, but their wedding anniversary was 2 days ago. Yeah.
And how many years would that be?
It would have been 70 years that they would have been married at that point. Yeah.
They left an indelible indentation in your heart, which is so interesting to me. Those poems radiate off the page. And we want to hear some radiating words, so we'll have another one.
States of decline. The room is dying honey and lemon rind, soured light. My grandmother sits in her chair, sweetening into the blue velvet. Domestic declension is the window that never opens. The paint peeling, dusting the sill, and inhaled. It is an American love she lives in. My grandmother, rigored to televangelists and infomercials, losing the use of her legs, needing to be turned like a mattress. No one is coming for her. The dog is asleep in the yard. Her husband, obedient to the grease and garlic in the cast iron, salting her death in the windhouse.
Oh, I get that. His cooking for her. The one, it moved me very much, the poem about her leaving and the dog remaining in the back room. Mm-hmm. That was very sad. You know, what does it mean if I know everything you've written? And I've read it twice, but I cannot forget any of that. That must mean something.
Oh, man, Chris.
Let's have a final poem. And what I'm so happy about is we got to hear so many. I didn't make you talk too much because I really wanted a body of work on this tape. So let's have a final poem. And thank you with all my heart.
Thank you so much, Grace. I'll read Lincoln Town Car, the poem that you just mentioned.
Oh, yes.
Lincoln Town Car. My grandfather would spell certain words so that the dog couldn't comprehend. O-U-T, F-O-O-D, the dog, that little bear fighter, ran into the road one day, buried in the yard now. In the next dog, he waited in the back room for my grandmother to return heavy-footed from around the corner. And when she didn't return, he remained there, unreachable as language. Something was wrong if we left the country. Fluid around the heart, not enough movement, syrup for blood. Leaving meant taking showers and my grandfather fixing my grandmother's hair. All of us clean-shirted in the front seat of the Lincoln Town Car. We shared a humid thought pressed as we were against the maroon leather, six-legged in the front seat. Before us, the highway unraveled, sorghum and corn and soy collapsing as the wind fell. Listening for light. I listened for muscadine swelling in the ditches on the waterlogged sides of the highway. I listened to the quiet narrow as we entered the city. I loved the language my grandparents spoke, saying nothing, holding both my hands was the pines that set off sound in them. My grandmother stared out the windshield and into the hills, saying, "That man, that man." My grandfather shifted in his seat at the wheel, practicing owning something. I had a feeling that I was the last led into the kingdom of their distance. Something was owed. Neither side would spell it out. I counted the fallen pines as the car dipped through the hills in the tide water, lonely as a dog with the whole world inside. I counted the pines and put my voice inside them.
And that is the voice of Taylor Johnson. And this is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. The program is produced by Forest Woods Media Production. Post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. We wish to thank the Library of Congress for making the program possible. Funding is provided by the Sinipet Fund, Natalie Conover, and Sandy Jackson Cohen. Our production team is Elizabeth Comets, who does our Apple podcast, Peter Von Fall, who does our website, and Henry Crawford, our YouTube person. Our engineer is Mike Turpin. I'm Grace Cavalieri.